Welcome back to the 2019 CGA podcast series, which focuses on the extracolonic management of FAP and is brought to you by the Education Committee. My name is Beth Dudley. I'm a genetic counselor at the University of Pittsburgh, and I will be your host for the fifth episode in our series. Before we start, I'd like to remind you that the content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. For those of us who are familiar with FAP, we primarily think of it as an inherited condition that causes the development of many colon polyps and increases the risk for colon cancer. As we've learned from the previous episodes in this series, though, people with FAP are at risk for medical conditions outside of the colon as well. During today's podcast, I will be speaking with Dr. Jennifer Cephas, Professor of Medicine in the Division of Endocrinology at The Ohio State University, about surveillance and management of thyroid disease in individuals with FAP. This podcast was recorded on April 26, 2019, and the content reflects expert opinion on data available at this time. As with any medical condition, we are constantly learning more about FAP, so some of the information discussed here may not be applicable indefinitely. Dr. Cephas attended medical school and completed her residency at Wake Forest University, after which she completed her fellowship in endocrinology at the University of North Carolina. She currently serves as the director of the Benign Thyroid Disorders Program at OSU. Dr. Cephas, thank you for speaking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So just to start, can you tell us what sort of thyroid conditions are associated with FAP?
Well, there may be benign conditions that can be seen with FAP patients, and there may be cancerous types of thyroid conditions seen in patients with FAP. As far as the benign findings, patients may typically have thyroid nodules or hypothyroidism.
Do we have any idea how common those are in people with FAP?
The thyroid nodules are very prevalent in the general population in the United States. Its frequency increases with patient age. But in patients with FAP, thyroid nodules may be seen in as many as 40 to 80% of patients. With hypothyroidism, it may be seen in up to 9% of patients. And this is significantly higher than the general U.S. population for hypothyroidism without FAP, which it's estimated to be about 4 or 5% of the U.S. population has hypothyroidism. Thyroid cancer may be more common in patients with FAP, and there's two types of thyroid cancer that we typically see in these patients. The classic variant of papillary thyroid cancer, and then there's a particular subtype of papillary thyroid cancer that's more frequently seen in FAP, and that's called the cribriform morular variant of papillary thyroid cancer.
So do we have any data about what the risk for thyroid cancer would be in a person with FAP?
Well, it's challenging to determine the actual risk for the development of a thyroid cancer due to FAP. And there's a lot of reasons for that. One of the reasons is there's a bias that's inherently introduced when we start doing screening ultrasounds on patients to identify cancers. And the reason there's a bias that it's inserted there is because the incidence of thyroid cancer in the U.S. population in general, meaning those patients without an inherited predisposition, can be as high as 5 to 36% of the U.S. population. The average rate on autopsy studies is probably around 10%, and these are people who died for some other reason, not thyroid cancer. So that number is staggering when we think about it, that 10% of the U.S. population may have a small thyroid cancer present in their thyroid and not ever know about it. These people died with it, not from it. So it's very prevalent in the U.S. population. So that is an important framework to have within your mind as you're thinking about the incidence of thyroid cancer in this population. And it's been estimated that this prevalence of thyroid cancer is a thousandfold higher than what we clinically detect through the usual mechanisms of identifying thyroid cancer. So if we go looking for thyroid cancer in patients of any kind, we're going to find a high frequency of it. So from that, discerning how many of these thyroid cancers we're identifying in patients with FAP are due to the FAP versus those that are due to just a high prevalence of thyroid cancer that is present in our entire population is very, very challenging. And it can make any time we do a screening test to identify these cancers, it can introduce some bias and the potential for identifying something that these patients have just because this is prevalent as being part of the U.S. population. So there are, having said all that, there are studies that suggest that the risk of developing thyroid cancer in the FAP population is higher than the general population. But what that actual number is going to be very widely discrepant depending upon the studies. Recent studies say that the incidence of thyroid cancer in those with FAP is reported to be between 0.4 and 11%. And a meta-analysis, meaning a study of multiple studies, found that the incidence of thyroid cancer in patients with FAP was about 1.6%. And to put that into comparison, the lifetime risk of developing a clinically detected thyroid cancer in the U.S. population is about 1.3%. So whether there's a significant difference there or not for clinically detected thyroid cancers is a little bit unclear, but certainly many, many folks do feel confidently that patients with FAP have a higher risk of thyroid cancer than the general population.
So if I'm understanding correctly, that could be debated. Maybe the incidence isn't that different, but are there other differences between thyroid cancer diagnoses in people with FAP versus the general population? Something like age of diagnosis, gender presentation. You mentioned the type of thyroid cancer, cribriform Mohler variant. Is that common in the general population, not common?
Very good questions. And I would say that, yes, there does seem to be a bit of a difference between those folks who have FAP and the general population. It appears that patients with FAP have a higher likelihood of having the cribriform Mohler variant than the general population. So for that reason, if we see the cribriform Mohler variant, we should be thinking about these types of patients with other genetic conditions such as FAP. It does appear that thyroid cancer appears at a younger age in patients with FAP compared to the general population. For example, it's estimated that the average age at diagnosis for patients with FAP is about 31 years of age, versus the U.S. population in general is about 51 years of age to be diagnosed with thyroid cancer.
And what about the gender differences?
So another difference between patients with FAP-associated thyroid cancer and the general population is that it appears to be more prevalent in women than in the general population. So for example, in the U.S. population, the risk of thyroid cancer in women is threefold higher than in men. Whereas in those folks with FAP, the ratios of women to men have been reported between 7-1 and as high as 80-1 female to male predominance.
So much more common, although in general,
it appears
more common in women as well. Yeah.
Correct, but it does appear to be more prevalent in females with FAP compared to males.
So since you had mentioned that there may be a younger age of diagnosis in people with FAP, I'm wondering, is it possible that this diagnosis could actually precede a knowledge of somebody having colon polyposis, especially for a person who doesn't have a family history of FAP?
In one meta-analysis of 129 cases of thyroid cancer, they found that half of patients were diagnosed with thyroid cancer before they were diagnosed with FAP. So certainly patients may present with their thyroid cancer, and that can lead to the diagnosis of FAP, particularly if these patients have the cribriform Mohler variant of papillary thyroid cancer.
So if you were to see a patient that was diagnosed with the cribriform boiler variant of papillary thyroid cancer, would you be inclined to refer them for a colonoscopy to see if they have evidence of polyposis?
I think it's absolutely reasonable to consider doing that. The guidelines are less clear on recommendations for doing various interventions, but some studies report that up to half of patients with CMV or the cribriform morular variant of papillary thyroid cancer do in fact have FAP. So it seems as an extension from that, that there's a high likelihood of identifying a polyp in those patients, depending upon their age, of course, but it certainly seems reasonable to consider a colonoscopy.
To kind of extend that thought, would you also refer any patient with CMV, papillary thyroid cancer, for genetic counseling to consider APC testing?
Yes, the National Comprehensive Cancer Network guidelines indicate that the APC-associated polyposis should be suspected in individuals who have the CMV variant of papillary thyroid cancer, and as such, germline APC molecular testing is indicated in these folks, so they should have genetic testing.
So we had talked a little bit about some of the differences in age of diagnosis and gender distribution between FAP and the general population, but can you tell us a little bit about the specifics of the thyroid cancer itself? Is it more aggressive in people who have FAP than people who don't, or are there any differences there?
So the patients who have thyroid cancer in general, fortunately, do very, very well as a whole, whether it's inherited or it's what we call sporadic or not inherited cancers. Now, when we talk about inherited thyroid cancers, we kind of think about them in two different classes. One is whereby the patient inherits thyroid cancer alone as an entity versus a syndromic type of thyroid cancer inheritance, such as those folks who have FAP, where they're getting a higher risk of developing a colon cancer and a higher risk of developing thyroid cancer. So we consider those to be more of a syndromic presentation of an inherited condition. In general, it's felt that those folks who inherit thyroid cancer alone probably don't have a more aggressive disease, but the studies are very limited and very biased and very conflicting in their outcomes of whether it is associated with more aggressive disease or not. Those folks who have this syndromic inheritance of thyroid cancer, such as patients who have FAP, it's not clear that those diseases, those cancers are more aggressive. But in general, it looks like those folks who have the cribriform morular variant of thyroid cancer have a lower risk of lymph node metastases, a lower rate of recurrent disease, and an improved survival compared to other subtypes of papillary thyroid cancer. So they seem to do fairly well. It seems to be behaving in a manner that is favorable for patients and associated with less risk of bad outcomes.
So what sort of screening, if any, should a person with FAP have for thyroid cancer?
So because of all the information I gave you before about the risk of thyroid cancer in the general population being as high as 10%, there is a lot of controversy about screening for thyroid cancer evaluation or for screening for identification of thyroid cancer, because there's a large reservoir of undiagnosed disease. And so when you identify a cancer, presumably you would think that identifying a cancer early or while it's small is beneficial for patients because then that improves their survival. But generally, when we look at thyroid cancer, screening does not seem to improve outcomes as it pertains to survival. And that's probably because we may be identifying some small cancers that never would have been diagnosed in that patient's lifetime if we hadn't gone looking for it. So it's a little bit of a challenging question to ask, even though it seems like it's fairly straightforward, because if we identify a small cancer in a patient, currently we have no way of knowing whether that small cancer would have ever grown or not because we're taking it out. And therefore, if we do identify that cancer, we're then forcing the patient to have surgery and additional interventions such as requiring lifelong hormone replacement therapy. And if that cancer was one that would never have gone to any clinical detection had we not gone looking for it, are we really benefiting that patient? So in the current environment with which we operate, we don't have a way to distinguish those cancers that are just small cancers that would have gone on to become bad cancers if we left them alone from those cancers that if we had left them alone, they would have never come to clinical detection. So from that framework we're operating with, we don't know which ones are bad cancers and which ones are cancers we could have left alone. But hopefully we'll be able to assess that in the future with additional investigation. From the current recommendations for surveillance are from the National Comprehensive Cancer Network, recommend annual thyroid examination, meaning palpation exam and questioning about whether the patient has any thyroid symptoms, starting in the late teenage years. Then the guidelines go on to say an annual thyroid ultrasound may be considered as an adjunct, but they acknowledge that high-level evidence to support performing ultrasound is lacking, and that recommendation is solely based on expert opinion, meaning we don't have good data to say, you know, an ultrasound is going to help our patients. It's going to identify clinically meaningful cancers or going to improve survival. So the current guidelines are probably intentionally vague because we don't have good research telling us how to distinguish good, not good cancers. There is no such thing as a good cancer, but cancers that wouldn't go on to become clinically meaningful cancers from those that if we left them alone, they would have gone on to become bad cancers. But the annual examination is absolutely recommended, and then ultrasound may be performed, and it's up to the clinician as to whether that's necessary or not, but a lot of folks will perform ultrasound just based on their own expert opinion.
So if a patient with FAP receives their care with a provider who feels like the ultrasound may not be necessary, what sort of signs and symptoms should they be aware of to bring to their doctor's attention to maybe prompt further evaluation at that point?
So most patients, when they have symptoms from thyroid disorders, will have what we consider to be local compressive symptoms. So that means the nodule or the goiter, the enlarged thyroid, are pushing on structures nearby, causing symptomatology. And the most common symptom that patients will have is a feeling of something getting stuck when they swallow, particularly at the level of the low neck around the area of the collarbone, feeling like something's kind of getting in the way, or they may feel a tightness in there or a pressure or discomfort when they turn their head a certain way or if they lay in bed a certain way. Additionally, patients may have some hoarseness, though fortunately that's fairly uncommon. There is a nerve in the neck that controls our vocal cords and it runs directly behind the thyroid. So if the nodule or nodules or cancer pushes on that nerve, it can make it not work as well and the voice can be therefore affected. And so patients will have a hoarse voice. This isn't a gravelly voice, which we often see if we have allergies or acid reflux, but more of just a hoarseness and inability to cough, food going down the wrong way, aspirating liquids in particular. Fortunately, that's much less commonly seen.
So if a provider does feel that ultrasound would be useful as part of the screening for an individual with FAP, is there any thought about how often it should be done?
There are a very limited number of studies evaluating how often screening should be performed. So the studies that have been performed found that those patients who had a normal baseline ultrasound, meaning they lacked any nodules, those folks did not develop thyroid cancer during a median follow-up of 5 years. So the authors of those studies said, if we increase the interval between ultrasound examinations to every 2 years, we can do this safely without missing any clinically significant thyroid nodules or cancers. But it's important to note this is only in patients for whom the baseline ultrasound was normal and did not reveal any nodules or suspicious lesions.
If a person who has FAP is diagnosed with thyroid cancer, how should it be treated? Would it be any different than someone in the general population?
Yeah, so in the U.S., we are making a very strong movement toward doing less surgery for thyroid cancer. And what I mean by that is, at least for the last 10 to 20 years, we've been doing total thyroidectomies, meaning removing all of the thyroid tissue in patients who are diagnosed with most thyroid cancers. Recently, there's been a shift toward doing less extensive surgery because we want to reduce the risk of complications to our patients. And more importantly, we have found that outcomes are just as good for the majority of patients when they have total thyroidectomy or a less than total thyroidectomy, such as a lobectomy or half of the thyroid being removed. So in the majority of patients in the U.S. who do not have an inherited form of thyroid cancer, we are performing a subtotal thyroidectomy or half of the thyroid is being removed. However, in patients who have an inherited condition where they are potentially predisposed to developing a cancer within thyroid tissue, and they have demonstrated that they have an existing cancer within their thyroid, those folks, it's recommended that they have a total thyroidectomy in general. That's because they may have some genetic predisposition to forming a cancer within that thyroid. And so rather than following them to see if they will develop a cancer somewhere else within their thyroid, we'll preemptively remove the entirety of the thyroid so that they cannot develop a cancer in the thyroid in the future. So in general, we're recommending total thyroidectomy for patients with FAP-associated thyroid cancer.
So after that surgery happens, what could someone expect in their recovery and in their ongoing life?
So most patients, surgery is going to be adequate therapy. We are sometimes using additional treatment for patients with thyroid cancer, such as radioactive iodine therapy. Radioactive iodine is our version of chemotherapy, but it's not a true chemotherapy. Radioactive iodine works because iodine is used by the thyroid to produce thyroid hormone, and the radioactivity that's associated with that iodine that we administer kills any remaining thyroid tissue that's maybe left behind. So for some patients, we will utilize radioactive iodine as sort of an adjunctive therapy. Unfortunately, it's a one-time treatment, and it's administered by mouth as either a pill or a liquid, and it's done as an outpatient. Most folks will not require radioactive iodine therapy, however, but when it is utilized, it's associated with just minimal side effects compared to other kinds of therapies that we administer for other cancers, such as chemotherapy. The most common adverse effect from radioactive iodine is salivary damage, which typically manifests with a dry mouth. But fortunately, most patients will not require this type of therapy. All of these patients, if they undergo total thyroidectomy, will need thyroid hormone replacement therapy. Because their thyroid has been removed in its entirety, they no longer can make thyroid hormone. This is administered in the form of a daily pill. The thyroid is an important organ. We need thyroid hormone to have the metabolic effects on all of our organs that it interacts with. So patients frequently ask me, well, what does the thyroid do? It is responsible for the metabolism of many organs in our body, including our heart. How fast does our heart beat? Our gut, how fast does our gut move? Our temperature regulation, and somewhat to a degree, our metabolism overall of our body, which can affect our weight and various other parameters. Thyroid hormone supplementation that we administer is a pill that the patient takes once a day. And fortunately, it is very inexpensive, and the medication itself is not associated with any kinds of side effects. The dose will be individualized for the patient, and that's based on a simple blood test that is drawn 6 weeks after starting the pill. And this is a very important component of the patient's treatment that they'll need to take for the rest of their lives.
But it sounds like it's generally well tolerated and not something that results in any sort of long-term major issues.
Correct. It is not going to adversely impact their overall prognosis, their survival, unless they don't take it. But if they take it as indicated and the replacement is adequate, then patients should expect their normal life expectancy and to feel just like they did before their surgery.
So obviously our conversation today has primarily focused on thyroid disease, but are people with FAP at risk for any other sort of endocrine-related disorders?
So it's not as well described in the literature, the other endocrine diseases that we see, but adrenal tumors have been associated with FAP, and it's thought that they're about 2 to 4 times more prevalent in patients with FAP compared to the general population. So putting that in perspective, the general population, approximately 1 to 3% of patients have adrenal nodules, so they're not very common. But in the FAP population, it's been estimated that between 7 and 13% of patients will have adrenal nodules. Most of these are just incidentally detected, meaning they're not symptomatic and the patients never really would have known that they had them had they not been looked for. There have been cases where these adrenal nodules are cancerous. In general, most adrenal nodules are not cancerous, but they can be, so an evaluation needs to be performed. And more often, these adrenal nodules will secrete hormones, and those hormones can have important effects on the patient. So as such, whenever a patient is identified to have an adrenal nodule, they should have a hormonal workup to make sure that the nodule is not creating too much of one of the hormones those adrenal glands can produce. And the treatment for that would be varying depending on the hormone that's being produced.
But it sounds like in general, the adrenal tumors associated with FAP are typically not terribly problematic.
No, they're fairly straightforward to manage. Sometimes they have to be removed just because of the hormonal component, but many times if they're not hormonally secreting, we can simply leave them alone and just watch them.
So obviously this entire series is really focusing on FAP, which we would typically think of as being related to an inherited mutation in the APC gene. I did want to just briefly ask your thoughts about whether or not there may be any risk for thyroid disease in people who have a different condition called MUT-YH-associated polyposis, which can really present very similarly to FAP, at least in the GI setting.
There are very few studies that have examined the incidence of thyroid cancer in this population, and the few studies that did look at this incidence, they found a modestly increased risk of thyroid cancer in individuals with the MUT-YH-associated polyposis. However, those studies are limited in a couple of ways. One, there are small sample sizes of patients, and there's the potential for some selection bias, meaning patients that were seen at this center may have gone there because they're known for one or more areas of expertise, and getting sent there, those patients are more likely to have that condition. Currently, the National Comprehensive Cancer Network guidelines do not recommend screening for extraintestinal cancers in the MUT-YH-associated polyposis patients. I think further study is really needed to establish the risk of cancer of the thyroid in this group of patients, and then to further evaluate how best to identify those patients.
So yeah, definitely more work to be done there. Well, I think that's all the time we have for today. So just in quick summary, individuals with FAP may be at an increased risk for thyroid disease, particularly the cribriform moiler variant type of papillary thyroid cancer. And some sort of surveillance, at a minimum thyroid palpation with consideration of ultrasound, may be useful for these individuals. And if someone with FAP is diagnosed with thyroid cancer, typically they will have surgery to remove the thyroid, but that doesn't seem to have any long-term negative effects on their quality of life. Dr. Sipas, thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us today.
Thank you for having me.